Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, and also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be delving into UK markets and looking at global influences on UK equities. And to do that once more, we're kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
Yes, very well. Looking forward to our summer investor evening tomorrow at Haberdashers Hall. If anybody's yet to sign up, I think there's a few tickets left if you want to grab a last minute ticket there. That's being held from 6 p.m. And also, obviously, of course, you can join us virtually if you're unable to make it into the city. So we're all preparing here at UK Investor Magazine for the event, but we're also keeping a very close eye on markets today, Alan, and really want to focus on one particular market to start with, in oil, because sort of looking at the dynamics of the oil market, of course, we saw a huge spike in the price on the tragedy in Ukraine, but we have seen a drop back from those highest levels since. But now, just in the last few days, we're starting to see a bit of upside pressure on the price of oil. And that's down to a number of factors. There's been some swings in US inventories, which suggests that there could be further upside in oil prices. And also, you know, looking forward a few months, there's still a relative amount of spare capacity in OPEC members, which suggests that we could see a increase in supply. If we're looking at the demand side of things, Alan, of course, there has been well-documented forecasts of a slowdown in global economies. Some economists are even calling for a global recession, which doesn't paint a particularly good picture for demand for oil, but we're yet to see any major drop off in oil demand, so that isn't really pulling prices down as some may hope. But Alan, you know, looking at oil and then obviously looking at stocks, you know, the FTSE 100. Of course, we've got the oil majors in Shell and BP. They really account for a huge amount of the index here. I mean, is this, you know, for UK investors that have, you know, investments, of course, through pensions, you know, broad-based equity, UK equity funds, for example. Is this good news if we see further upside in the price of oil for them?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, certainly for with companies like BP and Shell, and of course on other markets, you've got the major oil, the oil majors, forming major parts of the constituent indices. It's a welcome respite in many cases for some investors when the prospect of oil prices pushes the index higher. Although, of course, it's a very selective increase, driven of course by increases, but by the share price increasing. But of course, it doesn't reflect on increases in other stocks across the index. But we've got this cocktail of uncertainty. We've even got the revival of the Iranian nuclear deal that could see Iranian oil starting to flow back into markets. And of course, if that happens, then we might see the oil price capped and that upside pressure removed. But there are so many factors in play at the moment. We've got, of course, the potential price cap being discussed by the G7 on Russian oil. Agreements yet to be reached. So all of these factors are in this melting pot. But I think at the moment it's still a trader's market, and you know, for oil investors or investors who are bullish on oil, I think certainly the upside, there is significant upside on offer in the coming weeks and months. But there are so many factors that could derail that at any time. And Iranian oil is a major factor. You know, it's Iran used to be a major supplier of oil to the West. And of course, if that supply hits the markets again, then of course there could be all sorts of other factors to consider. And we'll certainly see a weakening of the oil price then if that happens.
Yes, indeed. I mean, more oil coming onto the market at a time that we see some weakness in demand may actually slow that flow, but there's no indication that's going to be happening in the short term. And as we've seen so far this year, the FTSE 100 has outperformed the United States, for example, as well as some European peers, yeah, due to that weighting towards commodities, not only oil, but of course metals and mining, as listeners would well know. So that would probably suggest a more defensive play in the FTSE 100 going forward for the rest of the year. But of course, on the other side, Alan, we've got, rising oil prices, which means higher prices at the pumps for consumers. And that's going to eat in and continue to eat in to household spending, just at a time that we're seeing inflation across the board and increases in interest rates, which is creating maybe a perfect storm for the first company that we're going to discuss today, Alan, in B&M European Retail Value. So this company, of course, operates the B&M stores, the discounters. So one would suggest, or one would think, Alan, that they're going to be a beneficiary of any slowdown in the economy.
Yeah, well, I think they have been. Certainly, the update this morning, the group, of course, have a variety of stores up and down the country. B&M Bargains. You've also got the Heron Group chain as well, or the Heron food price range, which is performing well for the company. And of course, at a time when retailers, particularly that market retailers or the mid range retailers are getting hit, discounters should be cleaning up. And certainly the company reported a decline in revenues in the first quarter, down 2.2%. And although it's well placed, I think going forward, of course there is still uncertainty as shoppers tighten their belts, but this is the place they will go if they have to spend money, so it's important to note that. And of course, certainly there was a bit of an upturn in performance toward the end of the quarter, and with that reported this morning, we've seen the shares rise by just under 2%, in an otherwise lackluster market. So we've just come off that year low at £3.44 a share, back up to £3.87 now. Year high, of course, is well over £6, so there is some opportunity there. And it's really, I think, whether shoppers can be persuaded to go into those stores if inflation carries on rising, and certainly at the moment there's little sign of it slowing down. Although I think, as we said the other week, the tools that the central banks have available to deal with high inflation now are far more comprehensive. They have far more control over the markets than they had, say, in the 70s when we had that, when inflation ran rampant. Then, of course, the standard of living plummeted and we were in crisis. There's also the issue of strikes as well. Will we have further strikes? We had the transport strike this week, last week, which cost the markets or cost the economy quite a few billion. And it's a question of whether those strikes through this era of discontent that we're seeing at the moment will continue, and whether we'll see other essential services go on strike too. But all in all, I think the backdrop for a company like B&M European Retail Value is still fairly strong. Also, the shares have come down a long way. So is it investable now? Yes, I think it probably is. If you're going to invest into this sector, this would have to be pretty well top of the list of stock picks. And also, of course, the company pays a 4.2% dividend too. So that's an important consideration. When you're making investments now, of course, you're looking to try to match or get close to inflation. So if you can pick up stock like B&M at or close to a year low, and also receive the dividend to boot as well, then it offers an attractive way to mitigate the effects of inflation on your portfolio.
Indeed. From my point of view, looking at it, I mean, I think what you said there, Alan, you know, for a portfolio that's looking to weather storms of a potential recession, one would think that you see B&M outperform the overall market if things get a little bit choppy out there. And of course, as you said, the dividend there does provide some compensation if there is any downside. One thing that I would probably just raise quickly is, you know, with a business like this, obviously it's all about margins. And if they're seeing increases in their input prices and obviously the prices that they're paying, that may be squeezed. Yep. But I think the focus will be on the top line. Yep. Going through a downturn. And as we've seen today, you know, with store openings as well, they seem to be on a sure footing going into this.
Just important to note there, Jonathan, that there weren't any supply squeeze issues noted in the results, which is important. I think the company would have outlined those if those issues were prevalent. But so I think certainly going forward, you know, given that the company doesn't seem to be suffering from these supply issues, then obviously we can certainly discount that factor for now.
Yes, indeed. Certainly for the moment, good point, Alan. They haven't said that they are suffering, so seem to be navigating that that quite well. So moving on now, Alan, to one company that is suffering today. And this isn't so much, I think, about, you know, the overall state of the economy. I think it's more about looking at how we've moved through the pandemic and obviously making comparisons on last year to the year before that. And that's Moonpig. Shares down quite heavily this morning, Alan, as I'm looking here, down 4.4%. They've released their full years. What do they look like?
Oh, well, the full year results are pretty good. And I think, you know, Moonpig, of course, suffers from being a technology company. But actually, the offering is terrific. And, you know, I'm sure you've used it, Jonathan. I certainly have. Because in this busy world we all live in, you know, when it's Mother's Day or whatever, it's goodness me, 9 o'clock, you know, or 7 o'clock the previous evening. Oh, got to send that card. And of course, you can go on a Moonpig on your app on the phone, do it, and get a perfectly crafted card arriving in the post the following day. You know, which is pretty impressive. And certainly, Moonpig have developed their offering. They've got market leading cutoff times. 9 p.m. in the UK for postage. With their business that they have in the Netherlands, that it's 10 p.m., so that's even better. But they, of course, announced back in May the acquisition this year of BuyerGift, which is the UK's leading gift experience platform. You know, the company, Moonpig paid 124 million cash for the company. They've certainly generated plenty of cash, and it's expected that that's against an EBITDA produced by a gift of 14 million, and they expect the earnings from the company to add some 20% to the annualized earnings per share figure. So that's a pretty good acquisition, and obviously given Moonpig's technology and its platform, it's the ideal acquisition, I think, to enhance and grow the Moonpig offering. They've also just appointed a non-exec, Shan Mei Tao, who was she's a chief finance officer at Third Bridge Group, and also a serial investor at Provenance Equity and MC Venture Partners. She's now on the board. And indeed, the numbers today, I think, read very well. I mean, revenue's up 75.8%. This, of course, is the full year to April 30th, following the IPO. So revenues have risen 75.8% to 304 million. Adjusted EBITDA up nearly 69% to 74.9 million. Adjusted pre-tax up 55% to 51 million. And of course, you know, this is combined with this acquisition, the acquisition announced in May. I think the company's got a chance to really accelerate growth. But as we know, in the current market, any news that's released by a company, given the jittery nature of the markets and also the nervousness of many investors, I think a lot of investors will treat any news release like this as an opportunity to offload the shares. And I think that's probably why we're seeing the share price weakness today. On the year, the shares, I think, have performed pretty well compared to some of the other technology stocks in the market, because the company is growing sales and it's expanding its offering. It's got a very good team in place. Of course, Nicol Ratitha, the chief executive, and the chairperson Kate Swan, who's been involved with many companies over the years, including WH Smith and Argus. So there's a lot of retail experience there, and they're growing this business, I think, very well indeed. So I would view any downside or weakness in the share price like this as an opportunity. And I'm pretty sure, given the rate the revenues are growing, if they carry on growing this way, they'll be paying a dividend before too long. So it is, I think, a great technology business to buy into for the future. And I would say with the core business, it's probably fairly resilient to any downturn, because it's still, I think, companies that have retail outlets, such as Smith, WH Smiths and the like, they'll be more vulnerable to a downturn, because a lot of people will probably, they'll continue sending cards, but they'll probably continue sending cards online, and they'll carry on using a service like Moonpig, where there are lots of offers all the time and the prices are still very competitive compared to driving into the town, walking into WH Smith's and picking a card out and then having to post it. So I think all those factors considered, they have a resilient business model and one that will probably do okay if there is a future downturn, given where inflation is now.
Do you think maybe there's a bit of concern creeping about the earnings this morning, Alan, in terms of not so much the figures, because obviously there's been a huge jump there, but in terms of where the share price is since the IPO and the actual valuation? I mean, so looking here at a profit around that 31 million mark and a market cap of 800 million, you're looking at, a price to earnings in the region of 25 times. Do you think there's maybe some concerns there that's a little bit rich? Do you think investors were maybe expecting a little bit more in terms of the bottom line from Moonpig this morning?
I mean, obviously technology stocks have raised their valuations because a faster rate of growth is expected. And so more flexibility or a more flexible view is taken of the potential that the company has to earn that. And I think with the Buyagift acquisition, they've stated their intention. They paid for the acquisition in cash, from funds. So I think the company is well placed going forward. Perhaps the earnings could be a little stronger, but I think the trend overall is very encouraging. I mean, we've got revenues of 304 million. So if you compare that to the current market cap, that's just over twice the market cap. And I know that's not the comparison to make, but it's certainly a factor to consider. I think what an acquisition like this will do, it'll improve economies of scale. It'll improve core costs. It'll reduce costs. And enable the company to leverage up on its technology and generate greater profitability from the existing infrastructure it has in place. So I think I would still view any downturn in the share price as an opportunity to pick the stock up, because I think the business model is right. I think there's an opportunity for the company to grow overseas and acquire other companies. And I think if they do the math right, there's a good team in place. I think Kate Swan and Nicol Ratitha between them are doing a great job in building the business. I think it's worth backing.
Yes, yeah, certainly. Hard to disagree with that, Alan. Just looking at what they're doing there in terms of those figures look really good, and one probably to keep an eye on as it bounces around those lows for any move back up to the upside there. So moving on now, Alan, we're going to discuss Botswana Diamonds. What's been the latest update from them?
Okay, so Botswana Diamonds. So diamond prices have certainly improved somewhat over the course of the year. Where there is uncertainty in the markets, assets like gold and like diamonds come into their own. And a company like Botswana Diamond that's in the space actively operating diamond mines and actively developing diamond assets is going to be very much key in that. And certainly if you look at the share price performance over the past year, we're just off year lows now. But the at a point just under a penny, but actually it's traded between a high of 1.7p on the year and a low of 0.78. So there's been very little fluctuation for a company that is an operator and an explorer for diamonds. So that tells you something about the resilience and the longevity of the offering. Botswana Diamonds, they class themselves as a junior explorer. They go where the geology is best. So rather than sort of try and rewrite the book, they'll go to old mines. They'll identify diamondiferous kimberlites, and kimberlites are of course the igneous rocks that contain diamonds. And then once they find those, they tend to joint venture with larger companies that have bigger budgets to develop the asset develop the asset to production and bringing diamonds into the market. The team behind it, so James Campbell's the chief executive. He's really driven the company very firmly for the past few years. John Teeling, the chairman, he's a veteran. Of course, John Teeling is well known in the industry, and James Finn is the finance director. Again, very well known and very well respected throughout. But John Teeling and James Campbell, between them, I think they need no introduction. They're well known sort of throughout the exploration industry. And the team came together after the discovery and then the subsequent sale of the Karoo Diamond Mine by Africa Diamonds to the Lucara Diamond Corporation in 2010. And Botswana Diamonds was formed when Karoo was sold. And they, as the name would suggest, they are very much focused in Botswana, but in particular on the Kapvaal Craton, which straddles Botswana and South Africa and Zimbabwe. They have a number of assets. They have the Sakaka Diamonds asset, which was acquired from Petra Diamonds in November 2020. They hold three prospecting licenses in the Kalahari and a very comprehensive database of information and data that's come with that. Then Sunland Minerals, Botswana Diamonds became the operator in 2018. There's the Gargu mine, which is close to a discovery made previously by Botswana called the KX36 discovery. And indeed, the Gargu mine is an asset that the company will develop. They put together a joint venture to acquire the Gargu mine with Gem Diamonds, but that subsequently lapsed. But the company are still making efforts behind the scenes to get that back on track or come up with an alternative solution. There's another company called Mabui Diamonds that has prospecting licenses in Kalahari. There's quite a complex ownership structure there. But overall, Botswana Diamonds owns a net 36% of that group, that group offering. And then on to the most prolific one, and that's the one that's really making all the headlines. This is this is in South Africa. It's an asset owned by Vitomi, which Botswana Diamonds acquired on September last year. And this includes the Thorny River project, Botswana Diamonds owns basically 76% of overall, and there's a South Africa empowerment company that owns the other 24%, which is quite normal practice in South Africa. So Thorny River has long been long been renowned for having or being the store to Kimberlites. And indeed, as the company have progressed the exploration over the years, this has very much come to the fore. The company raised just over half a million sterling in October last year, and in April this year, the company announced that the analysis they'd undertaken indicates potential open pit options to develop the kimberlites and mine for the diamonds there. An independent valuation was undertaken by a South African firm, Praktara, which indicates 170 carats per ton potential and a recovered grade of 40 carats per 100 tons, which are pretty strong numbers. Then on May the 4th, Botswana announced the largest anomaly to date at Thorny River, which is consistent with a kimberlite pipe of some 25 meters in diameter, and the company have a big drilling campaign planned there in July and August. So things are really progressing there, and this is a very exciting development. In fact, the team were engaged or have worked in various forms on or in the Thorny River region since the early 1990s. So there's been a lot of activity there. It's well known to be a store of value, and certainly with the drilling that's it will be undertaken in July and August. This could be a threshold moment for the company, and we could see, we may see a major discovery made in that region. But of course, kimberlite pipes are what diamond exploration companies look for, and indeed the most famous diamond recovered in Africa, the Star of Africa, which was an 83.5 carat diamond, was discovered within a kimberlite pipe. So all the indications are that Botswana may well have a decent discovery on their hands. So at this level, just off year lows, looks a great opportunity. Company's worth just under 8 million sterling at the moment, which of course is nothing. So if that discovery is made, then happy days.
Indeed. I'm sure to be one that we follow on the podcast when we get further updates, will be one that I'm sure we cover again in the future. So to finish off now, Alan, is one such company that we've mentioned on the podcast previously and has had a rich flow of news since, and it's Tertiary Minerals. What's the latest update from them?
Well, Tertiary has had a rich flow of news since, John, but unfortunately that's not reflected in any way in the value of the company and the share price performance. But it's well known, of course, Managing Director Patrick Cullen departed about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Patrick Cheetham, the chairman, and his team are continuing with the exploration that Patrick Cullen helped put in place. And of course, I'm referring to specifically the copper projects on the Zambia copper belt in Zambia, of course, in Africa. There are several assets here in Africa. But Jack's project is the most prolific, and it covers a large area on the or within the Zambia copper belt. And Tertiary Minerals has an arrangement with a company called Moasia in the region, where can earn up to a 90% joint venture interest, depending on the grades that are pulled from the ground and how well the campaign there progresses. And we've had our first big step forward there this morning when the company announced significant copper mineralization was intersected in all four diamond drill holes. And these are decent grades. Copper mineralization intersected over a strike length of 350 meters. And planning is now underway for further evaluation of the copper soil anomaly that extends over a further area, much larger area, 16 kilometers within the license area. So Tertiary has given notice to JV partner Moasia Resources that it's earned a 51% interest. Of course, it will duly exercise its option to continue earning up to a joint 90% JV interest. So a very exciting step forward for Tertiary. the target's got considerable potential. Remember, of course, I mentioned at the start, Jax is one of five licenses in Zambia where Toshi's got the right to earn up to a 90% interest from Washia. So, of course, it's the dry season there at the moment, so the work is underway. So we're going to have quite a few more results coming through in the coming weeks. Also, of course, worth mentioning that Tertiary has a number of other assets in Nevada in the USA. The Pyramid project, unfortunately, the Silver project North Ruth revealed disappointing grades, so they've not continued with that. But there are a number of other assets out there, namely the Brunton Pass copper project, which the company will be progressing. And there's a royalty, the company has a royalty stake in the Karaselka gold project in Finland, which is currently being drilled and worked on by Orion Resources. And that could potentially be worth up to 2 million sterling to Tertiary. So given that the Tertiary share price is currently 0.15p, it did pop up this morning. 0.15p values the company at 1.8 million. So that's a keep the lights on valuation in my book. There's no premium attached to that valuation for any of the assets the group holds. So I think there's huge potential upside here going forward. And with the news that's set to come from Zambia in the coming weeks, this could be a very good time to buy in.
Indeed, Alan, you picked up on a good point there. And obviously speaking with a number of people in the markets and operating within the junior resource sector, there is periods within that sector, there's a big disconnect between valuations and what's actually happening on the ground. And it's not really linked to metals or mining activities. It's more the overall perception of what's happening in the economy. Of course, junior resource companies aren't for the faint-hearted, and they're obviously for the more adventurous investor. But Alan, as you've been in the markets for some years, as have I, we've seen periods like this before where it's down in the doldrums. Then we see a change in economic conditions, and all of a sudden things start to perk up again. When that will be remains to be seen. But usually these downside moves and disconnects don't last forever. So just a recap of the equities that we discussed today. B&M European was the first stock with a ticker of BME. It was just then Moonpig with a ticker of MOON. We then discussed Botswana Diamonds with a ticker of BID. And to finish off was Tertiary Minerals with a ticker of TYM. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just a note to listeners, if you're not yet registered for tomorrow's Summer Investor Evening, there's a few in-person tickets left, but there's plenty of space in our virtual event room if you want to watch from the comfort of your own home. So do check out the events section on the UK Investor Magazine website. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.